choices, new players, new models of care. You know consumer-first healthcare is everywhere. For us to build the future, to see what's new, we gotta look at the world from a different point of view. Consumer innovation ain't going away. I say it's here to stay. Today it leads the way. We gotta drop the silos. We're all the same team. Experience, business, tech, and marketing. So join us now. Join the revolution. Consumer first health is the evolution. Status quo or like status no. Yeah, this is the healthcare rap. Yo, come on, let's go.
Welcome back to the leading podcast about consumer innovation. I'm Jared Johnson, and here's what's going to go down today. We have the flavor of the week about increased pediatric use of retail and urgent care clinics. Why is it worth doubling down on pediatric moments that matter? And how can we remove more friction for parents in distress? I'll talk about that. Then we're honored to welcome Dr. Geeta Nayyar, the globally recognized leader in healthcare IT and best-selling author. We address technology's role in improving the consumer experience of healthcare. We ask Dr. G to recap a panel discussion she moderated at CES with Mark Cuban and Glenn Tolman, and we check in on the reaction that the world has had to her book, Dead Wrong. It's time to dive right in. Are you ready? Let's go.
Flavor of the week.
What's driving a rise in the use of retail and urgent care clinics among younger patients, and what can we learn about it? According to an article in Patient Engagement HIT by Sarah Heath, the number of kids visiting an urgent care or retail health clinic is on the rise. The article says that more kids are accessing healthcare in a retail setting, with care access in grocery store clinics, pharmacy clinics, and urgent care centers up from 2021 to 2022, according to the CDC. The number of kids visiting an urgent care or retail health clinic increased from 21% in 2021 to 28% in 2022. The article also cites surveys about consumers' preferences, such as a 2023 survey of 1,000 adult healthcare consumers from Walters Kluwer Health that showed 58% would be willing to access their care in a pharmacy or retail clinic setting, and a 2023 report from JLL showed that convenient location was the second highest rated factor when deciding on where to access care, ranked only behind cost. Of course, those analyses included adult respondents, not the kids who were the subject of the CDC report, but adult parents and caregivers are usually making care access decisions for their children, linking the adult preference for retail health clinics with pediatric access. These data points suggest a shift out of primary care to more convenient care locations. Close quote. So a couple of insights. Number one, this data is still influenced by COVID-era healthcare behaviors, so it's interesting to see that the number actually increased in the immediate aftermath of lockdown periods. Seeing an increase from 2021 to 2022 is not insignificant, given the dynamics of healthcare outreach during that historic period. Number two, convenience and cost still apparently rank as important factors in urgent types of care needs. We're not quite past this first phase of consumerism as much as some providers wish we were. Many health system leaders seem eager to turn the page and talk about something else, but there are still many points along a health journey that are influenced by choices and expectations, as we frequently mention on this show. I'll give a quick side note. The longer I've been at this, the more empathy I feel here. I believe health system leaders can struggle to address consumers' needs and expectations, not because they want to ignore them, but because they don't know what to do about it. They either don't have a feasible plan, the necessary resources, or both. Number three, tying this to consumer experience, removing friction is even more important to a parent of a sick child. Few things can make a parent feel more helpless than trying to help a child in distress. So all of that friction that we just take for granted in the system, it multiplies when you're talking about a parent. The flip side is if you can reduce the friction at these all-important touch points, you've multiplied your chances of winning that consumer's loyalty. So it takes a true consumer mindset to be able to understand the dynamics of designing, building, and marketing more convenience into pediatric care. But since it looks like that's still what consumers want, it's worth doubling down on pediatric moments that matter. Let's factor in the benefits of improving the consumer experience for parents and children as we look to design and build new ways to engage people with healthcare in ways that they want and expect. That's another way that we'll build the healthcare of tomorrow. And that's the flavor of the week. All right, everyone, let's get into the flow. Please give it up for Dr. G. I'm here with Dr. Geeta Nayyar, a globally recognized leader in healthcare IT. She's the former chief medical officer at Salesforce and author of Dead Wrong, Diagnosing and Treating Healthcare's Misinformation Illness. So a couple of things we're going to get into today. We're going to address technology's role in improving the consumer experience of healthcare, what that means. We want to ask Dr. G to recap a panel discussion she moderated at CES with Mark Cuban and Glenn Tolman. I'm sure there's some fun stories there. And we're going to check in on the reaction that the world has had to her book, Dead Wrong. Very excited. Lots to cover. But first and foremost, Dr. G, welcome to the Healthcare Wrap.
Thank you so much for having me, Jared. Thrilled to be here.
I love to always start with just like, you know, the 2-minute version of who you are and what you do. What else would you like to fill in on your bio?
You know, I think just that I remain a passionate physician in the health tech space. And I think it's a really exciting time to both be a physician and to be a health technology leader. There's a lot of opportunity. The question is what we do with it.
Love that. I love that. I've also been asking guests lately of any career advice or really just anything that has helped shape their career in one direction or another. And they tend to be just things that don't seem that, you know, big or transformative at the time, but there's usually a lot of those points along the way in our careers. I don't know if anything comes to mind off the top of your head in terms of career advice or conversations that you've had or opportunities that you've had that have changed your career in one direction or another, if anything comes to mind there.
You know, I feel like every decade of my career, I have pivoted in some way, but I also think it's been a very steady and clear course as a passionate doctor who sits at the intersection of business, tech, and medicine. And so in the beginning, it was learning medicine, then it was learning technology, then it was learning how to merge them. And then it was informing what I thought the industry should be doing. And also, you know, with the writing of the book, kind of calling out some of the things we ignore. You know, mis and disinformation is a great example. It's like the smell in the air that no one really ever acknowledged. And yet we all knew it was there. So I would say to, you know, follow your passion, but to understand that every decade will bring something new and you will pivot, change, and evolve. And do not be afraid to fail. I wrote this book thinking no one was going to read this except for my dad. And turns out, you know, my dad did read it, but so did a few other dads. So I'm very proud of it. But I was fully prepared to fail. Like I was fully, you know, very much in the experimental phase and just said, look, I'm going to do this because I want to, because I can, and whatever happens, happens. So I think you have to be able to embrace that because you don't always succeed. And that's okay. I think you actually learn a lot more from the failure. And sometimes, particularly in the medical world, we're very perfection oriented, we're very outcomes oriented. And I'm not sure that's the best way to be because I think healthcare needs a lot more experimenting and entrepreneurship, which is full of, you know, peaks and valleys.
It really is. So being prepared. So I hear that not just, hey, cool, be okay with the failure part, but like being prepared for that to happen. That's an empowering part of actually innovating and being prepared for those pivots in our lives and in our careers.
Don't put the mortgage on it, right? Don't put the mortgage on it. What do I tell my daughter? I say, we always plan for the worst, but we hope for the best.
Indeed.
You got to have a plan. So it doesn't mean, you know, throw it out the window, but it does mean in measured risk. I guess measured risk is maybe a better way to say it.
That resonates very strongly. And I do think it's so essential, especially when we're talking about a field like healthcare, right? You know, where there are so many, I think I've been trying to describe it almost like things, innovation happening in multiple planes at once, right? There's innovation happening in clinically, then there's innovation happening in technology, and then there is innovation happening in the business and care model side of things. And so it's like all these intersecting planes that it's like, where do we focus? And we have to come up with the right ways to be able to be lifelong learners in applied ways. So I got to find a better concise way to say that, but you know, it's an important skill there for sure. And where I'd like to take that at this point is to just think about innovations from the consumer's perspective. And there are a couple of different aspects to that. One of them is one of the themes of this podcast, which we like to spotlight innovations that help consumers live healthier lives, right? So a lot of times that is tech focused. I just wonder if there's some top of mind thoughts about where healthcare IT and health tech is today. Any key trends that are top of mind?
Well, look, I think everyone is talking about AI. There's no doubt that this is part of every conversation. But again, we are never going to have a lack of technology or innovation. We are living in a consumer tech forward world where we have consumers that are going to be a lot more savvy with each new generation, and same for physicians. But we do have to be very intentional. The power of AI is phenomenal, and I'm incredibly excited about it if we point it at the things that count, like documentation, clinical decision support, prior auth, this idea that AI is going to be replacing doctors and nurses. We're not there yet, right? We're still learning this technology. And the idea that the consumer would trust an AI autopilot, I think, is also not there because we are living in an era where people do not trust the healthcare system, right? So we have to be very thoughtful about how we are both addressing establishing and growing trust in the industry, as well as being an innovation and tech forward industry, which desperately needs it because we have so much manual processes in healthcare. So AI is incredibly an awesome technology for us to put on those incredibly manual processes. But we just have to be mindful of not losing the human factor. And we also have to be very mindful of health equity, that the gaps that we currently see can either quadruple with AI or become closer and smaller. And so being really intentional in understanding that aspect to it, that last mile, that human factor, is really going to be the make or break it, whether it's AI or other tech. And we've seen it before. We've seen it with EHR. We've seen it with social media. It is the most important thing to remember is the human factor and being intentional and leading with that piece of whatever technology we implement today or tomorrow.
Well, I like that because I think it applies to transformation, if you will, in air quotes, in any form or aspect that we talk about it. And my understanding is that was one of the topics, the transformation side of things, on a panel discussion that you moderated at CES. So I just have to mention it because I loved following your feed on LinkedIn and some of the conversations that were happening in an exchange your daughter had with Mark Cuban, I believe, either before or afterwards. And so Mark Cuban, Glenn Tolman, CEO of Transcarent, on this panel, the title of the panel was "This Time It's Different, Where Healthcare Transformation is Working." Any just reactions to being on a panel with those two? I imagine that was pretty interesting.
Well, look, so Glenn is a longtime friend. I've been on umpteen panels with Glenn, so I knew that was going to be fun and easy. With Mark Cuban, it was cool. I'm not going to lie, it was pretty cool. I was definitely nervous, but he also very cool, very laid back, and I think the three of us really made for a good, interesting, informative panel. But I think we also had some good chemistry and some time before and after to just really a melding of the minds on where the industry is going. And I think it's tremendous what both of them are doing in the industry and pushing transparency and pushing the consumer being in the driver's seat, which is really good for the doctor as well. And that's where we have to find these mutual synergies, is that we often divorce the idea of consumer experience and patient experience. They're actually tied together, right? They're actually tied together. You can't really have a good consumer experience if you have burnt out physicians and nurses. So this idea of transparency, the idea of giving consumer power of the purse and power of decision making, it's also good for doctors who want their patients to be empowered. They also want to get reimbursed. They don't want to be waiting 6 to 9 months only to be rejected half the time by insurance or have to charge something $1,000 to only be told you're only going to get reimbursed $500. So I think what both Glenn and Mark are doing is very inspiring, and I hope to see more of it in the industry.
Well, I loved it. What was one of the standouts? So ask for the cash pay price. Is that like one of Mark's key pieces of advice?
That's right. And he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. And again, what he's doing with Class Plus Drugs, what Transcarent is doing, it's the same concept, which is how do we have more transparency in healthcare? How does the consumer have the power of the purse? And how do you align those interests with a provider organization and a payer organization, right? Because then if the MRI is too expensive, guess what? You're not getting it, right? The patient's not going to get that colonoscopy, not going to get that CT scan, whatever the procedure or, imaging might be. And also, how do consumers make good choices so that they can feel good about their healthcare and actually go see the doctor they want to see, who is a good doc, and have a good outcome. And physicians are happy, physicians are reimbursed, and physicians are seeing patients do what they need to do and feel good about the outcomes. It's a win-win. It's really a win-win.
I should have probably given more context to listeners, right? Like that part from the panel was memorable to me just because Mark Cuban gave his personal explanation of himself trying to engage with the healthcare system and explaining how pricing came to be a factor of his own experience. And I loved it. It was very real. And it was very informative of this is why, this is what drives us to innovate in this space. Were there other key points that stood out to you, other things from either him or Glenn that were just like, wow, things you thought about after the panel?
Well, absolutely. Look, I think the discussion around employer health, and I think Mark Cuban really laid out as an entrepreneur, as a business leader, that healthcare became his business because it was expensive. Right? It's expensive to the bottom line of every business. And so much of what Glenn and Transcarent are trying to do is to empower employers to give their employees better benefits, better decision-making at a valuable cost point with good outcomes. And so I think that's where the industry has to go. We have to have more of that because truly employer health is healthcare. in America. I mean, we saw it during COVID and we see it every day. I mean, at Salesforce, you know, we had 80,000 employees. That's public health. That's the private, public, you know, public companies, private sector providing healthcare to any number of employees. And you, again, you think of every big company out there, Fortune 500. Those companies are all doing healthcare from startups to the big employers out there. And so how do we help them be smarter about the bottom line when we're living in a world where the dollar matters? Everyone's being asked to do more with less.
I will tell you, it's a side of when we talk about consumer experience or the consumer side at all of healthcare, it's the side that I'm starting to hear more about, and that's encouraging, the employer-based offerings that are out there. There's still a good degree, I feel like, of education that needs to happen of what are these offerings, how do they work, how are they simpler? But the fact is there are more choices. And yes, that was the thing that kind of kick-started the idea of consumerism, I feel like, many years ago. And now it's, yeah, we don't just have a choice for our healthcare. We have expectations of what that's going to be like, what that experience is. And that does lead us to innovate in different ways.
And we want to know how much it's going to cost. Right? You go buy a car, you go buy a pair of shoes, you do your research and you're able to see apples to apples. And we have to have more of that in healthcare. You can't go to the doctor, have a procedure done, and then it's always this big surprise. Gosh, I wonder how much I pay versus my insurance company pays. And what was the value prop, right? Which if I had gone down the street, gone to a different zip code, if I drove 15 more minutes away or closer, would it have indeed been a better experience and a better price point? And that's what's really exciting about some of the work Transcarent is doing, is to try and provide some of that transparency. And we need more of that, right? We need more of that kind of innovation, because we have, as an industry, allowed that complacency to be there in the system to kind of just take control. And we as the consumer have to take it back. We would never accept that if we were buying a pair of shoes. We would never go to the store and then be like, oh, well, geez, you know, I really like these, but I just wonder how much they are. I guess I'll find out when I check out.
You know? Yeah, it is. And what's funny is that type of comparing to other areas of our lives, I don't know that it happened as much a few years, like prior to the pandemic. And now we're hearing this conversation so much more. And it is encouraging, because that's what starts, that's what gets the ball rolling to innovate in these spaces. So,
and we have to accelerate that, right? And that's one of the neat things that happened during COVID. Maybe one of the only neat things that happened during COVID is that we saw the acceleration of telemedicine, which is a technology. Again, and this is my thing on tech, right? It's been around a long time. It was never about the technology. It was the human factor. It was the way we implemented it. It was about how do we wrap processes like reimbursement, liability, state licensure, how do we set that technology up for success? And when you look what's happening in rural America, where there continues to be physician shortages, hospitals that are closing, more chronic and sick patients with less doctors to see them and less facilities to go to, we have to get really innovative about what virtual medicine can and can't do and how we think about specialty care in those areas. When you look at what Oshi Health is doing in this space, acknowledging, hey, we're not going to be able to do colonoscopies in every part of the country, but we can offer virtual specialty access, and then we can be a referral base to local providers of those services. And so those co-opticians, I would call that a little bit of innovation with co-optician, which is, you know, if you're a local GI doc, you're not going to like that. You're going to say, man, they're taking my patients. But if you are open to this idea of, okay, so this can now be a referral base, and the reality is I couldn't see every patient because we're living in an area where there's not enough specialists, we have to see more of that, right? Because there is space for everyone at this stage in healthcare. There is actually space for everyone to flourish and do well, but also do right from a public health standpoint.
So I want to give an amen on that. There is room for everyone. And I love this term, co-opticians. Might have to steal that. Let's talk about the book a little bit. So by the time this interview airs, it'll be around 6 months since the book came out. I'd love to hear just, for those, I've seen so many positive reactions to it. I'm wondering what you've heard, like what the reaction has been from the world. And maybe we start with just recapping the book's premise, because when we start talking about misinformation, it impacts everything. So maybe we start with that. Like, what was the premise of the book?
Sure. Thanks. I appreciate that. So first of all, you know, in healthcare, we are just so good at putting out the fires. We focus on the heart attack. We focus on the overdose. We focus on the virus, whatever infection disease it might be. But we rarely look to see who is causing the fire. Why is it that someone would wait to get a heart attack? Why is it that someone would take so many supplements and blow out their liver? And why is it that someone would turn to addiction, for example, if they weren't able to cope with stress or anxiety or have a genetic predisposition? So mis and disinformation is not new, Jared. It has been around since the Black Plague, since the first vaccine. And so it just struck me very much during the pandemic, although this is a post-pandemic kind of review at where we are as a society with tech and the continued acceleration of mis and disinformation, to say, hey, is healthcare paying attention? Because healthcare in many ways has allowed this to happen, right? If it's easier to find a TikTok influencer to get healthcare advice, which 59 million Americans do turn to social media for healthcare advice, than it is to follow your doctor or to follow your hospital, your institution, whatever it might be, well, then that's where the consumer's going to go, because we're living in a world where people are hungry for healthcare information. We look at where the wearables are today. It's one indicator, right? Wearables went from about a $24 billion market to about a $54 billion market from 2019 to 2023. I mean, the consumer is ready to buy devices from $200 to $500 to track their heart rate, their sleep, their mood, but they don't know what to do with it. They have no idea how to interpret it, but that's how hungry they are. They're like, well, I'm just going to measure it. Right, I'm just going to measure it because I can. And so we're living in a world where people want this information and they want it quick and accessible. And so for every healthcare organization out there, my challenge is to say who at your organization, whether you're a provider, a life sciences company, a payer, who is in charge of this? And the answer is resounding no one, right? Meanwhile, you have people in charge of patient experience, patient acquisition, patient retention, brand loyalty, physician engagement. And so within those priorities, we have to raise this one to the top, because ultimately at the end of the mis and disinformation train is the doctor in the ER cleaning up the mess, whether we're talking about HIV AIDS and all the myths that propagated around that, whether we're talking about fallacies around supplements, whether we talk about consumers just delaying getting care because they found it in other places and then having adverse outcomes. So it's really meant to be all those things. It's meant to lay out the problem, make a stab at the solutions, but it's really meant to be a call to action to say, hey, in this digital AI forward world, if healthcare does not own this, somebody else will, and somebody else has all this time, and they've made a lot of money off of victimizing patients.
What were you hoping that the outcome would be, you know, so as people read the book and agree with, if I saw a lot of head nodding from me as you're sharing this, right? Because it impacts everything. What was the hopeful reaction that you're like, hey, you know, things go well, you know, people do read this, you know, my dad and others, you know, read the book, you know, what good were you hoping would come out of it?
Well, look, again, I was shockingly surprised that anyone besides my dad read it, but I was very excited and obviously consider an accomplishment that so many people have bought the book, read the book. And really the ultimate thing would be to inspire people to action. I mean, that's really the main goal that I had, was I hope someone reads this and then does something about it, right? And I hope it's that C-suite executive that's either the decision maker or the influencer, but really to create this imperative that, and as we look at the world of AI and as we have all these questions about regulation and innovation, I certainly wanted this on the table to discuss, whether you're a policymaker, whether you're a business executive who's an employer, or whether you're a healthcare leader, I feel that this is a universal and ubiquitous one that needs to come to a head and needs to get the recognition it deserves, because it will continue to propagate, right? If we continue to ignore it, it will truly only get worse. And because of technology, we're going to be able to see mis and disinformation spread even faster and better and more efficient. So it will be too late if we let the weeds grow, right? It's going to be too late to let the weeds grow. It's going to be much harder to clean it up.
Yeah, I'm going to attempt to tie together a couple of those points, because when we're starting with one of the things you just mentioned, which is, yeah, misinformation has always been there. The ways that it impacts someone's decision to not just where to seek care, but am I going to seek care at all? That has a profound impact. And, you know, I spent some time client side at hospitals and health systems. And I remember most often just we were so obsessed about the hospital or health system down the street. We were thinking about other entities and we weren't talking as much about all the other ways, all the other points, all the other things that influence someone's decision, because that is an impact also, not just on themselves, but on our society ultimately, when people decide not to seek care at all. And when information is influencing them one way or another, then it's important for us to not only know, but understand and figure out what we can do about it. So I do think all of these things at the end of the day are impacting just how much we are taking steps towards our own health and wellness. And that's where this all comes together. So, you know, the last piece of that, we mentioned at the very beginning, like, is technology has a piece in this. Is there anything that technology can do to help not only stop the spread of misinformation, but just have other impacts on ultimately leading us to better health and helping consumers make better choices? What's the role of technology in all of that?
Well, technology can help us scale, right? Technology helps us scale the conversation, scale the truth, and scale trust. If we do it correctly, if we do it in a culturally sensitive way, if we do it with health equity in mind, if we do it with an understanding of where you are in your patient journey, is it pre-visit, during the visit, post-visit, is it before you're even a patient, right? And technology, if done well, it should inspire people. It should inspire people to gain access. It should cause less friction in the system, so much so that it's easy for you to point, click, shoot, make an appointment virtually or in person. We have all this technology that we never had, even 10 years ago. And we have consumers that are totally okay with virtual visits and doctors that are totally okay with that and consumers that want to measure everything. So we have to make all of this easier. And we also have to make the data accessible. We have to make doctors accessible. And we have to make the whole system just a lot less full of friction. You know, the other reason people look to social media for so much of their healthcare decision-making is because they find people to follow that inspire them. We need to be able to scale technology to inspire people to find healthcare leaders and find doctors, nurses, whomever, to inspire them to make good decisions about their health. And to date, again, technology is not the issue. We have so much of it. It's that human factor we keep forgetting. It's how we implement technology to reach humans, to improve humanity. That is the piece we have to be very, very intentional about. And I think there's still room to grow.
We need to be talking about that a lot more, about inspiring people and about scaling that using the technologies that we've already got. I love that. Any final thoughts, Dr. G, that we haven't discussed yet? Anything else that's coming to mind?
I am thrilled to be in health. I remain a passionate doc. This is how my journey started. I remain so encouraged by the reception of the book. I thank everyone for that. Amazon reviews are welcome. Good Amazon reviews are welcome. If you have anything bad to say, please leave it to yourself. I am working on book number 2. I'm thinking through what I want to talk about next, but I just feel really thrilled to be in healthcare at a time when we are so lucky. We are so lucky to have all these different tools, all the different technology available to us, and a consumer that's ready for it, and doctors and nurses that are ready for it as well. So I feel incredibly excited to be at this time, but we got to do something about it. We got to do something different. It's not the same old playbook that it's been for so many years.
Well, with that, I want to thank you. That's a wrap for this episode. I've had the absolute pleasure of speaking with Dr. G, and hopefully the first of many times to have you back on the show. But thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please spread the word. Tell your colleagues to tune in for all the awesomeness, then leave a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This show is produced by Shift Forward Health, the channel for changemakers. Subscribe to Shift Forward Health on your favorite podcast app, and you'll be subscribed to our entire library of shows. See our full lineup at shiftforwardhealth.com. One subscription, all the podcasts you need, and it's all for free. And remember, we might have a lot of work to do in healthcare, but we'll get there faster together. Thanks again.